Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is casino cheat Richard Marcus. He has retired from the cheating business and now writes books about his exploits. Tonight we're going to be talking about his book, American Roulette, which describes the pass-posting maneuvers in the games of blackjack and roulette. We'll be talking to Richard Marcus in a few minutes. We received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com from a player named Mitch, who had an experience in Harrah's Rincon, which is in Southern California near San Diego. Harrah had signs up that you could earn tickets for a $100,000 Tesla automobile over a particular weekend last December. Mitch played a lot that weekend, didn't win, and later found out that Harrah had awarded bonus drawing tickets to certain players prior to the drawing. This significantly diluted Mitch's chances. He became angry, talked to everyone he could, and got nowhere. Finally, he wrote to us and asked if he has a right to be angry about not knowing about the extra tickets. First of all, nobody can deprive Mitch of his right to be angry. If he wants to get royally ticked off, so be it. However, Mitch probably didn't read the rules first. At most Caesars properties, there are rules that say the casino can award extra tickets to anybody they like. Whether this would be a reason for Mitch not to play would be up to him. But many drawings at Caesars properties have extra tickets added by management. They tell you this, they can do it in the rules, and they do it. Big time. If Mitch didn't know about this, it was his own fault for not reading the rules. Richard Munchkin, you usually don't enter casino drawings. Do you have anything to add about this?
No, it reminds me, of the people who wanted to sue Revell because they didn't read the rules with that $100,000 rebate, 100% loss rebate. I don't know whatever happened to that lawsuit. I assume it went away because, it clearly stated that they were going to pay you over 20 weeks. So, I also, if it was not in the rules, if they did not put it in the rules, I feel like you would have a really minor chance of getting somewhere in Nevada where you have the gaming control board. In an Indian casino, you got no shot.
All right.
I don't expect casinos to act honorably. So, this would not be a big surprise to me.
Different subject. I wrote about Nate Silver's book, The Signal and the Noise, last year. Silver has recently come out with a website called 538.com. 538 just happens to be the number of votes in the United States Electoral College. Munch, you called my attention to this website a few days ago. What do you like about it?
Well, what I like is, actually, it's what I don't like. We don't talk about politics on the show, but we do talk about numbers. And back in the last presidential election, people were saying that Nate Silver was a genius and that he had predicted, he said Obama was going to win. And really, that is not what he said. He said that this is the chance of him winning. And it varied depending on how close you got to election day. But, at some point it was like 60-40, and people took that to mean, oh, he's going to win. And the same thing happened, this week, because he put out a forecast that the Republicans may currently have like a 60% chance to take control of the Senate. But if you read the actual article, it's very couched. He says it's way too early. This is subject to a lot of change and there's a high degree of error. But other people, again, take the numbers and misinterpret them. And I just find it funny that one group of people think 60-40 is a lock. And another, if you look at professional poker players, they call 60-40 a coin flip. So, but I would highly recommend the website to our listeners, because it's not all about politics. There are lots of articles about sports, and Nate has a background in baseball betting, but there was stuff on there about basketball this week, about tennis. So if you're a sports bettor or anybody interested in numbers, I think you'll find the website interesting.
Yeah, I enjoyed when you talked about it. I spent about an hour and a half on it. I couldn't get off of it, so it was interesting. There was a man who was arrested while driving through rural Arizona, and he had $400,000 cash on him. Now, this guy claimed...
What did he have in his other pocket?
I don't know. This player claimed that he got it from playing video keno at Harrah's Joliet. Now, they called up Harrah's Joliet, and they say this guy had some partners, and they were cheating at video keno. Now, I have no idea of this guy's guilt or innocence, but it seems to me that if you're carrying a lot of cash on you, you should make sure you obey every traffic law on the books. I know driving across miles and miles of rural Arizona is pretty boring, but if you can't stand to have your car searched, don't be exceeding the speed limit. So it takes an extra day or two to get home. That sure beats having the money confiscated and everything else that goes along with it. Munch?
I just cannot see driving with $400,000. I just can't see any reason for it. I mean, I would wire the money, if I were going to try to drive with that amount of cash, I would insist on making a video at the cashier's cage when they gave me the money and have the people there at Harrah's saying, we are giving him this money that he won here in this casino, so that I have, proof that I can show the cops before they confiscate it, which they're going to take it anyway. So, yeah, I just thought that whole story sounded fishy to me, too. They supposedly found some bug in the keno machine, but maybe the bug was created intentionally.
I don't know. There was something in on the Reuters news service today, an article that said the federal government is going to make casinos find out where their high rollers get their money. Now, and so if you show up with $400,000 cash, they're going to have to ask you where you got it, blah, blah, blah. Now, this is a bill in the early stages, and it's going to be changed, but this is somewhat worrisome. A lot of people have significant amount of cash, and they don't want to say how they got it or where they got it. But apparently, if you're going to play big in casinos, it's going to be necessary in the near future. Do you have any...
Since I started playing... from the very first year I started playing blackjack, I was hearing blackjack is dead. It's over. You're not going to be able to make any money. And it just, it just continues to be a great way to make money. But the thing that really worries me is I don't think that the games won't be able to be beat, but because we're moving to a cashless society, the death may be that you will no longer be able to be anonymous. So you might be able to find ways to beat the games, but you won't be able to find ways to, once you're identified as an advantage player, to be able to play them. I mean, that's my fear. It's harder and harder to play as an anonymous person these days.
That might well be why our guest, Richard Marcus, has retired. Now, before we start talking to Richard Marcus, please note that we're not taking a moralistic high road and saying to him, you are a cheat, you're going to hell. Neither are we praising him for being a successful cheat. What we are doing is trying to understand what's going around us in casinos, including some plays where we need to protect ourselves.
In addition to that, I would also like to say that there are lessons in the book for advantage players, that legal advantage players can learn some things that will help them in their legal advantage play.
Agreed. Now, Richard Marcus has been a gambler all his life. He arrived in Las Vegas in the mid-1970s, did well at first, then he went broke. He went to work as a dealer. A world-class cheater, Joe Klassen, observed him and thought Richard had the potential to be a con man, basically. Before Joe would take Marcus under his wing, Richard Marcus had to design a scam for Klassen and his team. Marcus did, and the rest is history. Over the next quarter century, Richard Marcus and his team took millions out of casinos. We'll talk about how he did that and what he is doing now. Richard Marcus, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. There's a bit of a fuzzy connection, so we're going to ask you to speak slowly, and we should be able to understand you better if you're speaking slowly. Describe the move where you, as a mini Baccarat dealer, were able to help Joe Klassen's team sufficiently that they allowed you to join up with them.
This was exact move that was made infamous by the Tran organization during the early and mid-2000s. Basically a false shuffle scam where all I did as a dealer, in those days the way a dealer functioned was a lot different. I was on a mini Baccarat table and the process was different. We washed the cards and then we laced the cards and then we put them in then we shuffled the cards and then we put them in the shoe. So I was able to do the whole thing myself. As I washed the cards, I picked them up in the orders, setting up a lot of natural player eights and nines for the first eight or nine hands or so. And then when I did the lace, I just protected the front edge, the front pack. It was a six-deck shoe, so I protected the first deck, and then I started the lace from the second deck backward, and then I just put them in the shoe. And then the beauty of that scam is the relief dealer actually came out and dealt the cards, because at the time, back in the 70s in Vegas, what they did on the mini Baccarat games is when a table laid dead, if somebody played like three or four hands and then left, the dealer wouldn't take the cards out of the shoe. The cards would just sit in the shoe and wait for the next player. So what I did is I shuffled the cards. It was my last shuffle before my shift was over. And I shuffled the cards with eight fixed player hands, and then the relief dealer, this was all timed perfectly, the relief dealer came and tapped me out, and the shoe was already set up, so the relief dealer actually gave out the money, and Joe Klassen and his cohorts, they took up all seven spots at the game, and we ended up beating this was the Sundance Casino in downtown Las Vegas. I think it became Fitzgerald's, and I guess it's still Fitzgerald's, or I don't know, but we ended up taking them for about $35,000, which back in the mid-70s in a downtown grind joint was a fortune. So that's the same exact scam that the Vietnamese Tran organization did to take $30 million or so out of casinos in the United States and Canada.
It was interesting to me that the way you describe it in the book, Joe had been watching you as a dealer and just decided that you would make a good addition to his team. Why do you think that is? What do you think he saw? Was it the fact you were both from New Jersey, or why you?
Well, it didn't exactly go down in that order. What happened was, he was scouting the casino and he was watching all the dealers, And at the time, the people running the Sundance, I believe it was the same people running the Stardust. And it was basically a little mob joint. And it was horribly run. And all the dealers, or all the dealers who knew anything, were stealing. And I really didn't know anything because I was kind of a new dealer. I'd only been dealing a couple of months. And the only reason why I was dealing is because the $100,000 that I won the month before that playing Baccarat, I ended up losing in one night, and I ended up dealing because I didn't have a place to stay or anything, and the only thing I knew about in life was how to play blackjack and Baccarat. So when Joe noticed that I wasn't stealing, he came up to my table, and you know he started to play, and right away we both have New York accents, so we both knew we were from the same place, and we just started to talk. And then he asked me, you know, he didn't mention a word about cheating or anything like that. And he asked me to meet him across the street at the Horseshoe for a drink, which I did. And that's when he laid it on me. When he said to me, you know, why don't you cheat the casino? I said, what am I going to cheat the casino for? What am I going to take, 5 or 20 or a green chip out of the rack? You know, I needed the job. And we spoke. And for some inexplicable reason, I immediately trusted him and had confidence in him. And that's how it happened.
Describe the 205 substitution move and how it would work in blackjack.
Okay, very simple. And the beauty of the move, which I didn't believe it when it was explained to me by Joe, is that the claim is made, the actual move is made after the dealer pays the bet. So what happens is I would go up to a blackjack table and bet 3 red $5 chips. And all the dealer would see were my hands. Underneath my hands were maybe 10 or 12 black chips. And also in my right hand was a pile of two, or a little stack of 2 black chips with a $5 chip on top, $205. When I won the hand and the dealer paid me $15, as soon as his hand came out to make the payment, my hand was going out there at the same exact time to pick up the original $15 I bet, lay down the $205 that I had in my hand, the 2 black chips with a $5 chip on top. The $15 I picked up would disappear into my left jacket pocket, and then I would grab the dealer's hand immediately. I would tap the dealer's hand very softly, but when you tap a dealer's hand in the middle of his round, it's like hitting him in the head with a bat because nobody ever touches the dealer. And as I touched him, I would claim, hey, you paid me wrong. And as my hand came up, the 10 or 12 black chips that I have, these are called backup chips. It has a psychological effect. And now I'm claiming, hey, you paid me wrong. I'm betting black chips here, and you paid me in reds. Please pay me right. And then I would give his so-called errant payoff of 3 red chips. I would give them a little nudge, and they would fall toward the dealer. And 19 out of 20 times, he would just pick them back up and put them in the rack and then call over the pit boss or the supervisor and say, yeah, the guy had 2 blacks underneath. I didn't see him. And the pit boss would just come over and say, pay him. Now, that same move graduated into 2 500s underneath a 5 or underneath a 25, 2 $1,000 chips underneath a $25 chip. And eventually, when I really steamed up the town back in 94, we started using $5,000 chips in Caesars and in the MGM and in the Hilton and all the chips, in all the casinos that had $5,000 chips that were the same size as the rest of the chips. But some casinos had their $5,000 chips were bigger. And when we used the $5,000 chips, the bet would be 300, 3 black chips, $100 chips, and I would switch the 3 black chips out and place 2 $5,000 chips with 1 black $100 chip on top, being $10,100. And then when I made the claim and said, hey, you paid me wrong, I would have 4 or 5 $5,000 chips that were buried under my hand that would become exposed as I was making the claim. So the two keys to why this works so well is, one, the casinos are just, for years and years and years and years, they've been trained to watch people adding on to bets, capping bets, before the outcome. Nobody ever knew anything about you could actually go out and change the chips after you got paid and create the shock. It was a shock that we created, and we used psychology. The main ingredient to my whole cheating career was not the nimbleness of my hands. It was the timing and the psychology. The fact that I tapped the dealer's hand and scare the living daylights out of him, and then had five or six backup chips that matched the denomination chips that I had just switched in, all lent credibility to the move. And that particular move had a payoff rate of about 93-94%. And when I went to the $5,000 chips, believe it or not, it had a payoff rate of almost 100%. And finally, the first time I had a miss after 151 in a row in Caesars, Hilton, and the Mirage and the MGM, when we finally had a miss, you know, the whole town steamed up terribly. But the reason why it had the most success with the $5,000 chips is because the original bet of 300 establishes you as a high roller already. So if you can bet $300 a hand, you can bet $10,000 a hand, especially when you have the backup chips there saying that you just did. And that was the basic bread and butter move of my career.
Do you think that could be done today with $5,000 chips?
Not only could it be done today, but it could be done with, in spite of the RFID technology. There are ways to beat RFID technology using the same psychology. However, the $5,000 chips, you know, that's a big number. That's a big thing. There's a lot to that. You can't just go into a casino and drop $10,000 on a crap table and say, give me two $5,000 chips. I'm going to call the $5,000 chips chocolates, because that's what they were in Caesars at the time. So you can't just drop $10,000 and say, give me two chocolates, because they don't just give out their $5,000 chips. So you have to go through a whole procedure, an offset procedure. Like one guy buys into a craps table with $15,000 or $20,000, or he already has a bunch of $1,000 chips and $500 chips, and then he's betting $100 and $200 on the pass line, backing it up with odds, and then he has two or three people, his teammates, offsetting him on the dome pass, so they don't get buried on this little act to get the chips. And then after a certain amount of action, the person with the $15,000 or so in chips, he colors out and gets the $5,000 chips. And then there's a whole procedure, because, you know, casinos tend to follow, they watch their $5,000 chips. So it could be done today. Today, casinos are more confident in their sophisticated surveillance technology. And the more confident they get, the more vulnerable they get to people like me. The technology, the surveillance technology, is going to stop a lot of scams, a lot of high-tech scams. But somebody who comes in with a little ingenuity and you know, brains and balls can still do it, yes.
I just, my point was, it's actually, $5,000 chips are really hard to get. First of all, they're hard to get a hold of, and they're hard to get rid of now.
I used to keep an inventory of them. When I was working, I worked the $5,000 chips during about a year and a half. And what I would do is, once we had three or four $5,000 chips from the casinos that offered them, we never cashed them out. What we did is, when they paid us on a move, let's say a $300 blackjack bet pass posted into $10,100. So we're taking the casino for $9,800. That's what we're stealing from them. $10,000 versus the $200, and then after when they paid us, usually they would pay in, because most tables didn't have $5,000 chips on them, so they would pay us in $1,000 chips and $500 chips. If they happened to pay in $5,000 chips, then we would break them down immediately, because we didn't want to get stuck holding too many $5,000 chips, and then again, we didn't want to go through the buy-in procedure to get them. And so what I would do is, I would actually keep three or four from each casino. And one time I made a trip to Europe, and I was in Europe for 3 or 4 months, and the MGM Grand in Vegas discontinued their series of chips while I was gone, and now I was stuck with three $5,000 chips that were now not being used. They were now, I forgot what they call them, canceled chips or unredeemable chips or whatever they called them. So I didn't know what to do, so I just took the three $5,000 chips, and I threw them on a baccarat table, and I see what happened. And they just they honored them, and they just gave me current chips. So to answer your question, yes, they're very hard to get. And, you know, we were so good and so experienced, and I knew so much about every casino. I knew what I could do and not do, and so we were able to do it. But, you know, could anyone go in, even if it's a skilled pass posting team, can anyone go in and use $5,000 chips? No. Can anyone go in and use $1,000 chips? Yes.
Right. Yes, I agree.
Now, this 205 move, or however high you made it, it requires a certain amount of dexterity. How much practice would be required to get the move down pat?
I could teach you to do the move and claim it before the show is over.
Uh-huh. Well,
your grandmother could do it if she's still alive.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, that last part doesn't match up. But
let me just add to that. A lot of people believe that sleight of hand and magic has something to do with casino cheating. It really doesn't. It's all about timing. It's not about sleight of hand. It's just about timing. So all you have to do is pick up the chips that you're switching out and put the chips back, put the chips in that you're switching in, you know, with reasonable speed. And as long as my hand was out there touching the dealer's hand, by the time he was paying the next player over, or if there was a gap between me or two spots, as long as I could get the dealer's hand before he finished paying the table, I was okay.
When you're
now, we actually
go ahead.
We had a listener submit a question. He wanted you to respond to the comment that the most dangerous place in the casino is the cashier's cage.
I would agree with that.
So when you guys would pull this move, would you go cash out or would you leave right after the play?
What do you think, Richard?
I would expect you to
what
leave.
What do you think? am I going to go to the cashier's cage with $10,000 or $20,000 in chocolates after, don't forget, the exposure we pulled on the tables, once we got paid on a $10,000 bet, we didn't just get up and leave. We would break them down and then give them what's called bet backs just to cool them down. So if we did a move for the $10,000, my next bet would be $1,100, following the same pattern with that black chip on top. And then, you know, win or lose two or three hands, then we get up, and then, you know, we have our own internal security to gauge how much heat we took. And then I never went to a cage with a $5,000 chip. What we did is on different shifts, we actually had 3 or 4 days where we wouldn't be working the casinos. We would just be cashing out. Because when you're working with $5,000 chips, you're accumulating hundreds of thousands of dollars in chocolate chips, $5,000 chips. So we would go 3 or 4 chips at a time, break them down at a craps table, play and offset the same way we got the chips. And then finally going to the cage, cashing out, and never cashing out more than $9,999 at one time, because you were mentioning before on the show about the problems the guy was having with the video poker. You can't show up with all that, you know, you run into the IRS problems. So everything was very sophisticated. And, you know, the way most casino operations get busted is the same way the money laundering operations get busted in casinos at the cage.
Can you explain what the danger is at the cage for our listeners? What can happen at the cage?
Well, the first thing they add, well, I haven't been active in Vegas for a long time now, but the first thing what the major casinos would do, if you came to the cage with $2,500 or more, they would call up. They wouldn't just, they would call up the pit. They would ask you where you were playing, and they would call up the pit. So, like, for someone like me, you know, where was I playing? I was in the casino at the table for, you know, a few minutes, and I didn't want to go through that, so I would... More than not, I would cash out, unless I had to cash out more, I would cash out like $2,200, $2,300, and, you know, like the big casinos, they have 3 or 4 cages, so I could avoid going over to $2,500 and still cash out $10,000 worth of chips. So that's the first thing, is that you're exposed. They can come out and look at you, they can start filming you. So the major danger at the cage is you're just exposed. You're like sitting there naked while they're determining whether or not they're going to pay you. if somebody did a cheat move on a craps table, let's say, and they maybe they took some heat, they don't want to say, you know, and then they come to the casino cage with large nomination chips, and the teller asks, where were you playing? And the guy lies and says, I was playing blackjack. They actually call, and they call the pit manager or whoever, and they describe you. Yes, so-and-so, 6'2", blonde hair, da-da-da-da-da. He says he was playing in your pit, and no. And they say, no, we didn't have anybody here playing that, and that's how you get in trouble. It's just that you're naked at the cage. It's you and the teller and the telephone. And the telephone is, when you're committing major felonies in casinos like we were doing, the telephone is your enemy.
Now, the Savannah move, that's a kind of reversed pass-posting play. Tell us how it differs from the standard pass-posting play.
The Savannah move, and like you said in the beginning of your show, or one of you said in the beginning of your show, we're not here to condone or praise, but for this, I deserve a little praise. The Savannah move was, still is, and will always be the best casino move of all time, and you could hear that from people like Bill Zender, Willie Allison, who are very big in the casino surveillance and security business. And anyway, I had to come up with a move that after I took all this heat with the chocolate $5,000 blackjack, after they realized that I was hitting them for $5,000 and $10,000 a pop, because we were on $5,000 maximum, don't forget the table, some of the tables had $5,000 maximum payouts, others had $10,000 maximum payouts. So on the ones that had the $5,000, I can only do what was called a 51, that two blacks and switch in 51. And sometimes they wouldn't pay. I was $100 over the limit. They wouldn't pay it. The same thing with the $10,000 max payouts. But when they realized that we were beating them for, $5,000 and $10,000 a pop, and they knew it was me beating them, the whole town got very, very hot during 94 and 95. That's when I decided I had to come up with something that could even beat the eye in the sky. And basically what I did is, since we were already using $5,000 chips, we weren't going to go down in how much we were going to take out of the casinos. I would simply go down to the bottom of the wheel, bet one $5,000 chocolate chip with a one or two $5 chips on top of it, but jutted out the two red $5 chips on top of the $5,000 chocolate chip were jutted out maybe a fraction of an inch toward the dealer, so the dealer could not see that bottom chip. Looking from the dealer's position and even moving his head, it looked like $15. It looked like three red $5 chips instead of a $5,000 chip underneath two red $5 chips. And then the ball is spinning, and I'm waiting there at the bottom of the wheel, and my partner is at the top of the wheel. And we would usually bet these on the third column or on the third section, 19 to 36, or one of the three columns on the bottom. And if the number was a loser, my partner would yell, damn. And I'd go out there and grab that bet right off the table. And you would think I got caught by the dealer every time. The actual, I actually only got caught about 20% of the time. The dealer would see me take the chips. And that's not something the dealer is going to handle subtly. The dealer explodes. Hey! What are you doing? Put that down. And what do you think I put down? I put down three red $15 chips, what he thought was there. And then when the pit boss comes running to the pit because he just heard his dealer scream, it's an innate natural scream when you do something flagrant like that. And the dealer explains, and I would go right into a drunk routine. I had a glass in my hand of water, but or a beer, whatever it was, and I would just immediately go into a drunk routine. And I would start stuttering, I didn't know the ball dropped. If you didn't hear me, I was saying, I didn't know the ball dropped. And I was, acting like a drunk. And then the pit boss would take a look at me. And, he would see I was just a drunk. And the dealer was it was just a $15 bet. And remember, in Vegas, any large denomination bet, $100 or more, it's got to be called out. So since nobody ever called out $100 on the outside or $5,000 on the outside, they never go to the eye in the sky. No, the eye in the sky never gets called. But on the other hand, what happens if that bet won? If that bet won, it's a $10,000 payoff on one of the columns. And immediately, if the bet wins, my partner up front, he doesn't say anything, and I just go into the claim. I start jumping up for joy and going, by golly, I hit. There it is, 10 grand on the column. Now, the dealer has no idea what I'm talking about because the dealer can't see the chip. So, most of the time I had to say, there it is, the $5,000 chip on the first column box. And then the dealer would have to leave his position and come back down and actually lift the $5 chips off. And then, boom, the $5,000 chip bites them in the nose. And then when they call, of course, they're going to verify that because the dealer's not just going to give you $10,000. So they call the pit boss, and the pit boss is immediately suspicious. They call the Eye in the Sky, and what does the Eye in the Sky see? They run back the tape because by this time, all the casinos already had 24-hour coverage on all their tables. They run back the tape, and boom, there it is. Pay them. And the really funny thing about this story is, after a while, they knew it was me. They knew I was the biggest cheat in Vegas, and here I am, claiming $10,000 legitimate bets that they know I have to be cheating somehow, but they could never figure it out. Now, just let me add before you ask the question: if the bet lost, if I had a losing bet or a winning bet, that was it for that casino and that shift. It wasn't like I would do one where I lost and then go over another table somewhere in the pit and do another where I won, because there was always a chance of surveillance investigation going back and then finding the move where I actually picked up the chips, where they never called the Eye in the Sky, thinking it was just $15. So, you know, they could marry the winner to the loser and the whole scam could come apart. And they never did figure out that scam until I wrote it in the book.
How did you get heated up then if they never figured it out?
Well, because, inner surveillance communication, when word gets around town that, $5,000 chips, winning bets are popping up that nobody called. The dealer never said chocolate on the outside. And these are monster bets. Nobody, you could walk through Caesar's Palace and you can go a month without anybody betting $5,000 on a roulette table outside, because big players usually don't play roulette. And all of a sudden, all over town, surveillance is getting calls at $5,000 winning bets that the dealer never called, and then I'm getting identified, because I tried not to do it myself. I had my teammates doing it, but, my teammates were, it was the same people, because while they're going for surveillance verification, they're filming you. So, it was the same three or four faces every time, and I was identified. At the time, I was one of the, if not the most well-known cheater in the world, so they knew, there he is. That's Richard Marcus, and he's claiming $10,000 winners that nobody saw. And they know I'm a pass poster, but this is, obviously it's not pass posting. It's the opposite. It's called pinching or dragging. And the actual scam is an old variation of what was called a walkaway scam in Vegas in the 50s and 60s with all the arcade joints on Fremont Street. Guys used to bet $100 bill on cash play. At the time, it was cash play, and they would bet $100 bill with four singles, four $1 bills underneath it, and then they would grab it, and if it lost, and then when the dealer, I'm sorry, they had the, they would actually bet the $500 legitimately, five $100 bills. And then when it lost, they would grab it, and then they would put down $100 with four $1 bills underneath. So they would save $396. It was an actual variation of that scam, but obviously this scam was much better because of the simple fact that you could hide one chip under another, before the dealer spins the ball. And I always made sure to make the bet out real early. So there was no, when they ran back the tape, they saw the bet was sitting there way before, even before the dealer spun the ball. So, they thought, since they knew I had to be cheating, they thought I was clocking the wheel they even thought I had a magnet or something. It was hilarious what they thought. And years later, when I started working for the casinos, and when I appeared at the World Game Protection Conference in 2007, and I was meeting up with guys like Andy Anderson, who was a very well-known, I'm sure Richard has heard of him, a very well-known Griffin agent chasing card counters and cheats. And he told me what they were going through to try and figure out what I was doing. And the two of us, we laughed for about 2 hours over a couple of cocktails just listening to that.
We actually have tons of questions to ask you, and we're not going to get to most of them. So, number one, you have to come back. Number two, you have a website, richardmarcus.com, richardmarcusbooks.com. What kind of things can people find there?
Everything. Everything and everything to do about cheating, not only in casinos, but online. I've made it my business to stay on top of online casino cheating, and I was one of the first to the Russ Hamilton scam at the UltimateBet.com. I went on George Knapp's KLAS in Vegas. I did a two-part news special with him back in 06, and I basically told him that was going to happen. And I took a lot of, I got blown away by a lot of negative criticism by online poker players and brick and mortar poker players and tournament players who said I was full of crap and this and that, and it came to be true. But on my website, I have a blog. I talk about what's going on. I have tips how to be cheated, how not to be cheated, how to cheat. Just about everything. I have a Hall of Fame. Richard is a member of the Blackjack Hall of Fame. I'm a member of the Casino Cheaters Hall of Fame, as are several other well-known people. I have a Scam of the Month, where I talk about the greatest scams page, where every month there's one of the greatest scams of all time is featured. The Savannah was, of course, one of them. Just a whole bunch of information, everything you ever wanted to know about casino cheating. And for people who read it, and if they have any questions that aren't on my site, they can just email me, and I'll be glad to answer any questions about casino cheating.
You know, I'd just like to say I really enjoy reading your site, but I just wish you were a little more on the details. A lot of times it's pretty thin on the details. So I enjoy your writing, but I'd love to see more. Like, just one example you had, apparently you claimed that there were some loaded dice now that are undetectable. But there weren't a lot of details. So,
no, well, the reason why there's not a lot of details is because I didn't have any details. I said when I wrote that recently, a couple of weeks ago. I was told about that, and if I believe in the blog post, I don't quite remember, but I think I asked if anyone had any details on that, or I don't recall that exactly, but I don't have any details, and I stated that I really don't believe it. So I'm waiting to, you know, loaded dice was never my specialty, and I have heard about that, and I do have contacts, and I do speak to people that are in the know with a lot of this casino cheating stuff, and you know, as I said, I don't have details, and since I wrote that blog post, I still don't have any other details, so I have to assume that it is not happening as of now.
Yeah.
Every time you do one of these moves, there's always a potential that a player sees it and calls you out. Hey, you're cheating. You're not supposed to be doing that. There was a brown chip there, and when you put it back again, there was only a red. Now, that can't happen very often, but since you've done this thousands and thousands and thousands of times, surely that must have happened some of the time.
It happened about 8 times. If you remember my book, there was a very funny scene where I was on a riverboat in Illinois, where you were just in Joliet, as a matter of fact. It's very funny that you were just mentioning that with the video poker thing. And I was on the ship with my and those days they were cruisers. They would cruise the river. They didn't just stay docked. And I never liked, you know, I'd done it a few times before, and I never liked working the riverboats. And I was saying to my two partners at the time, Pat and the guy we called Balls, I said, hey, why don't we just let this go? And but they outvoted me 2-1. And I said to Pat, right before we went and we were doing this blackjack move. That's what we were doing. And I said, well, what are you going to do if you get a rat? Because I knew that was the only way that we were going to get caught. Nobody ever, you know, if there wasn't a rat, there was no problem. You know, 99% of the time. And sure enough, it was a $50 bet. And he switched in a $1,000 chip. Underneath the 25, two new chips, $1,025 for the $50 he switched out, and he starts yelling, "Hey, you pay me wrong!" And this obnoxious, ugly girl sitting at first base, Pat was on third base, yells at the top of her lungs, I saw him switch the chips. He's a cheater. And I said to myself, oh, my God. And I forgot to say this. And I said to Pat, well, what are you going to do if you get caught? And he said, well, I guess I'll have to jump. And then
into
happened,
the river.
And I'm going, oh, my God. And Pat takes off and he runs. And I don't know where the hell he went. And I'm standing there listening to this. And then two minutes later, I hear a security guard's radio cackle. He jumped. And the rest of that story is very funny. He jumped into the Illinois River or whatever river it was. He jumped in there with his suit on and shoes, carrying the chips, and he didn't even take his shoes off. And he drifted 2 miles and ended up. He found a phone booth, called up a cab, and a cab comes into the middle of this swampy area and picks up a guy in a soaking wet suit, dripping wet. And he says to the guy, look, he gave the guy $100 bill, a soggy $100 bill, and he just said, all right, take me here. And we had an emergency meeting place. So don't forget, in those days, there were no cell phones. So we would use voice boxes in Vegas to communicate when we got separated. But that's one of the funniest stories of my career, and it also answers your question about rats. Very, very rare. And a lot of people see it. You know, it happened 8 times, but I don't know how many times people have seen moves. And most people just do not want to get involved. And certain people, certain types of people, like Orientals, Asians, will never get involved. So usually the person that's going to rat you out is a naive, I'll say casino naive person from the Midwest. Nobody from New York or Boston is going to rat you out. Generally, simple. I'm not criticizing anybody from the Midwest, but people who are less involved with hip type people from New York, those are the people that are going to rat you out. Now even a roulette moves, like I do roulette moves where when the dealer turns his back after he sweeps the layout, I pick up the roulette marker. And by the way, that roulette marker was invented in 1954 by a surveillance person in the Sands in Puerto Rico, and to stop passball thing, because in the old days they would just point to the number and say four, winner number four, there were four black, even. They wouldn't put that chess piece or that roulette dolly on it. They invented the dolly they thought it would stop the passball thing. So I used to go under there. I wasn't the first one to do it, but I'm just saying I used to go under there and do it, and I would go right underneath the dolly and pull out five roulette chips worth $1 and stick $100 chip right in there. And then the claim would go on. Now, that kind of move is going to be seen a lot easier by other people at the table than, say, that blackjack move, which was never seen. Because the blackjack move was in the flow. When my hand went out to switch the chips, it's normal. You're going out to pick up your winning bet. But when you go out and pick up the chess piece while the dealer is sweeping the losers off the layout, that's flagrant. So a lot of people see that. But very rarely, again, maybe in hundreds of those moves, I only had two or three rats. So that goes to show you that, you know, people, they just mind their own business. They don't want to get involved. You know, they hear that thought, though, sir, will you come back and testify, da-da-da-da-da. And people, I guess they learn in movies or whatever not to open their mouth.
Richard Marcus, you must come back and visit us again. This was very fascinating. We have lots more questions for you. And we haven't even started about your dirty poker book, which we're going to have a lot of questions about that. So that's at least two more visits you owe us. Do you understand?
No problem. Anytime. I enjoyed it.
Very good. Thank you very much, Richard Marcus.
You're welcome.
Richard Munchkin, that was interesting to me.
Yeah, and actually some of my favorite stories from the book I didn't even get to ask about yet.
Exactly.
So.
Mine too.
Yeah.
So good. We were wondering which guest to have in the near future. Maybe we can have him on once a month for the next 4 months or something. All right. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. In March, they have two different progressive bonuses going on. There's one, starts at 10,000, keeps going up, and must be hit by 25,000. It's going to go to slot and video poker players. Should you be playing while somebody else wins the award, you get $20 in free play. Once a bonus jackpot hits, another one begins immediately. This goes on throughout the month, 24/7. They also have a smaller daytime progressive that starts each day at 1 p.m., and that's at 1,000, guaranteed to be hit by 2,500. So if you're playing in the afternoon, you're actually eligible for both bonuses. The free video poker class at the South Point next Wednesday at noon will be Deuces Double Bonus. This is a Deuces Wild game where you get more for five of kinds, but only even money for straights. Unlike last week's Deuces Bonus game, this time you get twice as much for five aces, a little bit more for five, twos, threes, and fours, but less for full houses and flushes. This makes for dramatic strategy changes. The game returns 99.81% and is the highest returning games in more than one casino. At the Palms, tomorrow is the last drawing for this month. 12 winners at 7 p.m. share $7,500, and then the 48 winners, 12 from each of the 4 weeks, participate in a winner-take-all $10,000 prize. Next month, April, will also have a 7 p.m. must-be-there-to-win drawings on Friday evenings. Each week, $10,000 is given away to 10 winners. You earn five times entries Friday and Saturday, 8 to midnight, and two times entries all day, Sundays and Tuesdays. This month, PEW, Play, Earn, and Win, all the gifts are from Tiffany Jewelers. This ends tomorrow. The top prize is a $200 gift card. You may have earned the prizes by your play since March 17th, but any points not redeemed by tomorrow at midnight are forfeited. Beginning next month, the inappropriately named PEW gifts become PFP, Play for Points. It's not as bad as PEW, but it's PFP doesn't really grab me. For the first 2 weeks in April, the top prizes are Chevron gift cards, $10, $25, $50, or $100. You can also earn car washes and lubes at Terrible Herps. You may earn and redeem points Monday through Friday, and points last until you redeem them or April 12th. At videopoker.com, that remains the best place to practice a wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw, Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, many others. Often these games are the best returning games in a casino, and you need practice to make sure you know how to play. For their weekly contest this week, they have 100 Play with Quick Quads, Super Times Pay, and Big Times Draw Poker. 100 Play with Quick Quads is a hoot to play. Were I to find such a machine with a decent pay schedule, preferably for quarters or higher, I'd love to play it. When you hold such a hand as 8883, you typically get around 8 or 9 Quick Quads or natural 4 of a kinds. Each Quick Quad comes with a sound, Quick Quads, Quick Quads, Quick Quads. Anyway, it's fun. Mostly I play games for their expected dollars per hour win. Quick Quads also has a fun element attached to it. I'm not going to be playing a negative game. I can be playing it, you know, for free on videopoker.com, but I do enjoy the experience. Our guest next week is Ed Miller. He writes about low-limit poker. Munchkin, we have 1 minute left. What do you know about Ed Miller?
Oh, just that he's written a number of really good books, really good for people, I would say, both beginning and intermediate players. And we've had him on quite a lot. He's a great guest. Always interesting.
Yes. And this game, the book is called The 1%. So the purpose of it is to, for good players, to take them that last 1% to turn them into a great player. So the book is has just been out for a couple weeks. It's had some excellent reviews, and I'm actually looking forward. Ed's a fun guest to have. All right.
Yeah.
So, and then we actually have 10 seconds left, so I'm going to say goodnight, everybody. Thank you, Richard Marcus. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.